Welcome to the OCR A-Level Religious Studies Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor, and today we're diving into one of the most philosophically rich and exam-critical topics on the entire specification, the problem of evil and suffering. Whether you're sitting paper one or working through your philosophical theology, this topic is almost guaranteed to appear, and the difference between a grade C and a grade A star often comes down to how precisely you handle it. So let's get into it. Before we start, a quick note on what we're covering today. We'll work through the two forms of the problem, the key theodicies and their critics, exam techniques specific to this topic, a quick-fire recall quiz, and then a summary to lock it all in. Grab a pen, because you'll want to make notes. Section 1, Core Concepts. Let's start with the absolute foundation. The problem of evil is not one problem, it is two distinct problems, and confusing them is one of the most common mistakes examiners see at A-level. Let me say that again. There are two problems, and you must treat them differently. The first is the logical problem of evil. This was articulated most powerfully by J.L. Mackey in his 1955 paper, Evil and Omnipotence. Mackey's argument is a priori, that means it's based on reason and logic alone, not on observation of the world. His claim is that the following three propositions form what he calls an inconsistent triad. God is omnipotent, meaning all-powerful. God is omnibenevolent, meaning perfectly good, and evil exists. Mackey argues these three statements cannot all be true simultaneously. If God is all-powerful, he could prevent evil. If God is perfectly good, he would want to prevent evil. Therefore, if evil exists, either God lacks the power to stop it, or he lacks the will, meaning he cannot be both omnipotent and omnibenevolent. This is a logical contradiction. Not just unlikely, logically impossible. That's the key word for your essays. Impossible. The second is the evidential problem of evil associated with William Rowe in 1979. This is a posteriori, based on observation of the world. Rowe doesn't say God's existence is logically impossible, he says it is improbable. His famous example is a fawn caught in a forest fire, suffering intensely before dying, with no human witness and no apparent moral purpose. Rowe's argument is, if God exists, he would prevent pointless, gratuitous suffering. Suffering with no redemptive purpose. But such suffering clearly exists. Therefore, God probably does not exist. Notice the word probably. That's the evidential problem, not impossible, improbable. Write this down as your memory hook. Logical equals impossible. Evidential equals improbable. Now, before we move to the theodicies, we need to distinguish between two types of evil. Moral evil is evil caused by human free choices. Murder, war, cruelty. Natural evil is evil caused by the natural world. Earthquakes, disease, famine. This distinction matters enormously when you're evaluating theodicies, because some theodicies only really explain one type. If you generalize and say the free will defense explains evil, an examiner will immediately ask, but what about natural evil? Humans didn't choose to create earthquakes. Right. Theodicies. A theodicy is an attempt to justify God's goodness in the face of evil. Let's take the two main ones in turn. The Augustinian theodicy, sometimes called the soul-deciding theodicy. Augustine, writing in the 4th and 5th centuries, begins with a crucial philosophical move. He defines evil as privatio boni, meaning the privation or absence of good. Evil, for Augustine, is not a substance or a thing that God created. It is the absence of good, just as darkness is the absence of light. This is important because it means God did not create evil. Evil is simply what happens when good is removed or corrupted. Augustine then explains how this corruption entered the world. He points to the fall, the disobedience of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. God created a perfect world, a perfectly good creation. But Adam and Eve, exercising their free will, chose to disobey God. And this act of disobedience introduced both moral evil, the tendency to sin, and natural evil, the corruption of the natural order. Augustine uses the concept of seminally present, drawn from Romans 5 verse 12, to argue that all humans were somehow present in Adam at the moment of the fall, and therefore all humans share in the guilt and the consequences of that original sin. Suffering on this view is deserved punishment for a freely chosen rebellion. Now, the challenges to Augustine are significant, and you must know them. Friedrich Schleiermacher argued that Augustine's theodicy contains a logical contradiction. If God created everything perfectly, how could perfect beings sin? The very capacity to sin implies an imperfection that God must have built in, which contradicts the idea of a perfect creation. This is a devastating internal critique. Additionally, modern science, particularly evolutionary biology, tells us that natural evil in the form of predation, disease, and death predated humans by hundreds of millions of years. Dinosaurs were suffering long before Adam and Eve. This makes Augustine's claim that the fall caused natural evil scientifically untenable. Now let's turn to the Irenaean theodicy, developed by the 2nd century theologian Irenaeus and significantly extended by the 20th century philosopher John Hick. Hick's version is often called the soul-making theodicy. Hick begins from a different starting point. Rather than a perfect creation that fell, Hick argues that humans were created immature and incomplete. Drawing on Genesis, Hick distinguishes between the image of God, imago Dei, which humans already possess, and the likeness of God, similitudo Dei, which humans must develop through moral and spiritual growth. We are, in Hick's phrase, in the making. For this growth to be genuine and authentic, Hick argues that two conditions are necessary. First, epistemic distance. God cannot be overwhelmingly obvious to us because if God's existence were self-evident, we would not freely choose to love and obey him. We would be compelled by the sheer weight of divine presence. God therefore maintains a cognitive distance, allowing humans to make genuine free choices. Second, the world must be a veil of soul-making, a phrase Hick borrows from the poet John Keats. A world without suffering, challenge, or difficulty would be a moral nursery, producing no genuine virtue. Courage requires danger. Compassion requires suffering. Patience requires frustration. Without evil, the virtues that make us godlike cannot develop. Hick also introduces eschatological verification, the idea that the full justification of suffering will only be apparent in the afterlife, where all souls will ultimately be brought to salvation. This is sometimes called universal salvation, and it raises a significant problem. If everyone is saved regardless of their choices, does genuine moral freedom exist at all? The most powerful literary challenge to Hick comes from Fyodor Dostoevsky's novel The Brothers Karamazov, published in 1880. The character Ivan Karamazov presents a series of cases of children suffering, tortured, abused, killed, and then asks his brother Alyosha, "Even if a future harmony is achieved, even if all this suffering is somehow redeemed in the end, would you be the architect of that world if it required the tears of even one tortured child?" Ivan says he returns the ticket. He refuses to accept a theodicy that justifies present innocent suffering by appeal to future benefit. This is not just a literary flourish, it is a philosophical argument about the proportionality of suffering to growth. And D.Z. Phillips makes a similar point. Suffering is not always educative. The death of a child does not teach the child anything. It may destroy the parent's faith rather than build it. Section 2, exam tips and common mistakes. Right, let's talk exam technique, because knowing the content is only half the battle. The single most important thing to understand about OCR A-level religious studies is the AO1 and AO2 split. AO1 is knowledge and understanding, worth 40% of your marks. AO2 is analysis and evaluation, worth 60%. Most candidates write too much AO1 and not enough AO2. If your essay is mostly explaining what Mackey said, what Augustine said, what Hick said, you are leaving the majority of your marks on the table. Every paragraph should contain evaluation, not just description. Use the PEEL structure: point, explanation, evaluation, link. Your point states your argument. Your explanation provides the AO1 knowledge, the scholar, the concept, the precise terminology. Your evaluation is the AO2. Does this argument succeed? What are its weaknesses? How does a critic respond? And your link connects back to the question. On timing, you have roughly 40 minutes per essay. Spend 15 minutes on AO1 content and 25 minutes on AO2 evaluation. This mirrors the mark weighting. If you find yourself running over on description, stop and evaluate. On command words, to what extent questions require a definitive judgment in your conclusion, not, on the one hand, on the other hand, a real conclusion. The Augustinian theodicy ultimately fails because, or Hick's theodicy is more successful than Augustine's primarily because, examiners are looking for intellectual courage, a willingness to reach and defend a position. Common mistakes to avoid. First, conflating the logical and evidential problems. These are different arguments requiring different responses. Plantinga's free will defense is primarily a response to the logical problem. Rose Fawn is the evidential problem. Don't mix them up. Second, using scholars as a list of names rather than as dialectical tools. Don't just say, Mackey argues and Plantinga argues. Use them in dialogue. Mackey's inconsistent triad appears devastating, but Plantinga's free will defense undermines it by arguing that even an omnipotent God cannot create free beings who always choose good. This is a logical impossibility, not a limitation of power. Third, treating the free will defense as a complete solution without explaining its mechanics. Alvin Plantinga's key move is to argue that the coexistence of God and evil is logically possible. Not that it's probable or desirable, just possible. He argues that God, in creating genuinely free beings, cannot guarantee their choices. A world with free beings who might choose evil is more valuable than a world of moral robots. But, and this is your evaluation, this only addresses moral evil. Natural evil remains unexplained by free will. Fourth, on Hick, you must engage with the critique of universal salvation. If everyone is ultimately saved, the moral stakes of human choices are reduced. Does epistemic distance genuinely allow for free choice if the outcome is predetermined? This is a high-level evaluative point that will earn you marks in the top bands. Section 3, Quick Fire Recall Quiz. Cover your notes and answer these out loud or in your head. Question 1. What are the three propositions in Mackey's inconsistent triad? Question 2. What is the Latin term Augustine uses for evil, and what does it mean? Question 3. What is the difference between imago Dei and similitudo Dei in Hick's Theodicy? Question 4. What does epistemic distance mean, and why does Hick think it is necessary? Question 5. What is Ivan Karamazov's ticket, and why does he return it? Question 6. What is the key distinction between the logical and evidential problems of evil? Use the words impossible and improbable. Question 7. Name one internal critique of Augustine's Theodicy and one external critique. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back to the relevant section of your notes and review it before your exam. Section 4. Summary and sign-off. Let's bring it all together. The problem of evil is a challenge to theism that takes two forms. The logical problem, which argues that God and evil are logically incompatible, and the evidential problem, which argues that the scale and intensity of suffering makes God's existence improbable. The two main theodicies, Augustinian and Irenaean, offer contrasting responses, rooted in different understandings of human nature and God's purpose. Augustine looks backward to a perfect creation corrupted by free choice. Hick looks forward to an incomplete creation being perfected through suffering. Both face serious challenges, and your job in the exam is not to declare a winner, but to evaluate the relative success of each with precision using the scholars and concepts you've learned. Remember, AO1 is the scaffold, AO2 is the building. 60% of your marks are in your evaluation. Be bold, be specific. Use the technical vocabulary, privatio boni, epistemic distance, eschatological verification, gratuitous suffering, and always, always distinguish between moral and natural evil. Good luck in your exam. You've got this.